When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some, I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time, turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding out, 5-hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Good afternoon and welcome into Grant and Danny. You are locked into the Fan. It's December 18th, 2024. It's a Wizards Wednesday, which means we will give away tickets to see the Wiz ahead of our Beltway Blitz right at 4 o'clock. And we are blitzing the East at 5, spinning you around the division, checking in with all three teams in the NFC East. Ahead of that segment, right at 5 in 3 hours, we'll give away tickets to see the Capitals here on Grant and Danny. Last night was as bad a loss as the Caps have suffered.
Yeah, gross.
All season. Bad team, up 2-0 after 40 minutes. Three unanswered goals by the Blackhawks in the third period. They don't get a point on the road. Back-to-back losses in 2 days. On the road, first time all year.
Yeah, it's a bummer because, you know, they did all the hard part, right? I mean, rallying back from a travel shebangus, losing to a really good team on the road, no shame in that. That's going to happen when you drop one in Dallas. Competitive game could have gone either way. And then you don't get in until the following day, you know, a handful of hours before you're supposed to play. You got through it. You got a lead. Maybe not quite yourself, but you got a game. You got to get out of there with at least a point. And the fact that they don't just, that one stung a little bit. But here's the thing. No trophies given out here in mid-December. Still got plenty of hockey left, but that's one of those, not they're going to miss the playoffs, but it's somehow for a seeding thing later on down the line. There are a couple of those games where you go, damn, San Jose probably should have beat them. Damn, Chicago had them beat with a couple minutes left. Should have done that. But, you know, they'll keep catching some breaks. They were due for a little bit of a letdown.
Totally. They have been playing at a level where they were the best team in hockey.
Yeah.
And whether they are or not, I guess we'll find out in the next few months. But they've had more good wins than bad losses. And I think you'll still take the ledger
100%.
And the fact that they've been incredible, especially without Alex Ovechkin. A quick State of the Union on the Wizards. Have not seen them since Sunday against the Celtics when they got beat by 14. They've got the Hornets in town tomorrow night at 7 o'clock. And then the Bucks are hosting the Wizards on Saturday night. So light week for them overall. But let's start with the Commanders news of the day because I thought this was actually a pretty big deal. The Commanders opened the 21-day window for John Allen to return before the end of the season. And it sounds like Allen is expecting to potentially play against the Falcons next week.
Pretty crazy.
That he may very well get to play not once but twice to end the regular year and then in the playoff game. I think a lot of us, when they ruled him out and said he was going to have surgery, the reports were that he was out for the season with a torn pec. That's normally a year-ender, and you're back into the offseason. Apparently, he knew right away with surgery that it wasn't as bad a tear as was originally assumed, which is really good, and that there was a chance he could get back. He's been working diligently, grinding. And a lot of people have said this along the way, but you and I have talked about how badly we felt for the guy because he's been here for so many years when they weren't good, when they weren't 9-5, when they weren't headed to the playoffs. It was a real bummer that he wouldn't get to enjoy the stretch run. Well, maybe now he'll get to play in a win-and-in game against the Falcons next week. Perhaps he'll get to play in a clincher the week after that, if that's how it works out, in Dallas. And he'll get to play in a playoff game if they make the postseason.
He deserves a lot of credit. And here's where I'm going with this. A lot of folks may roll their eyes and just sort of say, you paid so much money, you should. Here's what I'll tell you. there's a great chance, whether it happens this way or not, I don't know internally what they're thinking, but there is an off-ramp here for one of their highly compensated players. He's got a cap hit next year of $23 million. They may want to reallocate that. They may want to just keep him. I mean, who knows? But there's a chance he's played his last game in Washington. This is now with that injury. You're 100% right that he didn't get to experience the reward. It would be very, very easy for a guy coming off an injury looking to cash in and sign somewhere else in free agency to have that just have been his last game, right? I mean, you're talking about, I don't say rushing back, because obviously you're not going to do anything medically reckless, but doing everything you possibly can to come back, to be there with the guys that you're landing on the line with just for a couple more games and maybe the postseason. Really, really cool, man. I mean, again, a lot of guys have made a lot of business decisions where we wouldn't have known better either way, because when you hear torn pec, you're going, he's gone, he's done. There's no way he comes back. But doing everything you possibly can to make sure that you can come back, even if it's for a week or 2 weeks, or you get three games out of it, it's pretty incredible, man. Speaks to the man.
So I'm not surprised at all that John Allen gets back, because he is such a worker, right? A leader of men type. Alabama champion. One of the guys that's run the locker room here for several years. I do think there are some other factors at play, which is to say, number one, from a team standpoint, I'm sure he wants to play in the playoff. He has never gotten to play in the postseason environments that he wants to the extent that he'd like to as a player in Washington here, and I'm sure that's going to mean something to him. The other thing is, as you pointed out, I do not believe he is likely to be back here next year, based on not having any guaranteed money on his contract. If that's the case, then he's going to be a free agent. To go into free agency off of a torn pec, not having played since October 13th against the Baltimore Ravens, when he suffered the injury in week 6, with a 6-week sample, where, frankly, he just wasn't playing at his normal Pro Bowl caliber level, might have cost him more money than if he's able to come back and play a couple games at a high level. And we have no idea, but let's just say he plays against the Falcons, has a sack and a tackle for loss, right? Then he plays against the Cowboys end of the year, getting into football shape, makes a couple more plays in the backfield, and then he goes out and he has a sack and a half or two sacks or three hits on the quarterback in a playoff loss or something like that. There's tape now at the end of the year where, number one, the pec is fine. Number two, this guy's still got it at 29 years old. This is someone you want to pay if he becomes available. So I think he can get what he wants out of it, which is to play in a playoff game. He can get what he needs out of it financially and from a business standpoint, which is to make some money this offseason potentially. So everybody wins here. And oh, by the way, for a Commanders team that's been playing, Sheldon Day and some other guys they signed off the street as the season went along, they could benefit if he comes back and plays at his ceiling, which is still higher than that of most of the D-tackles on this roster.
Yeah, welcome reinforcements for sure for a group that, maybe now with Lattimore can be a little bit more aggressive up front there, right? I mean, you saw a pretty good performance against New Orleans. That's, to me, as good as they've looked stuffing the run. And I'm, I don't know if you stuff Philadelphia like that with Barkley, not quite on pace anymore to set the record, but still 2,000-yard pace, Jalen Hurts as good a runner as he is, et cetera. But, yeah, you could use reinforcements as you come into the playoffs for sure. And think about this. You wouldn't use this as a strategy, obviously, but there's a benefit maybe not having the wear and tear on your body over, these last couple of months that everyone else has. He comes back and he's fresh, sort of down the stretch here as everyone else is pretty beat up.
John Allen, 21-day window opened. Back on the practice field, he will be ramping up his workload. He will not play against Philadelphia this weekend, obviously. But from what I'm told, there is a chance he could be back on the game field against the Falcons, and then he would finish the season against the Cowboys with the hope of him being able to help them in the playoffs. Supposedly, and this was via some reporting from John Keim of ESPN about 5 days ago now, they realized when they went in to do the operation that even though they thought it was a full tear, it was only a partial tear, and that's the difference between them saying he's out for the year and him actually coming back. It's not like he tore it full and he's just coming back anyway. They basically went in there, and I guess that day of the operation, they told him after the week 6 injury against the Ravens in Baltimore, hey, you actually might be able to get back. No guarantees here, but if everything goes well, the timeline's probably late December more than it is, late January, February.
Yeah.
And so that's a... all of a sudden, something you can dangle in front of yourself, and he put in the work, so full credit to him. I think that up front defensively without him, while it hasn't been perfect, they've gotten decent production out of some of the other guys they've tapped into, to the point that they have started to deactivate Fidarian Mathis, like the last couple of games, he's been a healthy scratch because they kind of like Sheldon Day and some of these guys they've been using as space-eating presences against the run. I thought they did a really good job against the run early against the Saints.
They were really good. I mean, the only rushing totals that happened later in the game, I think to me, were about the, you know, 2-minute drill where you're playing coverage and, you know, New Orleans ambushed you a couple times with Kendre Miller on some carries. But even still, that was only 5 yards a pop a handful of times. Alvin Kamara, an excellent running back, was stuffed. Period, end of story. They were really good. A lot of negative runs, and New Orleans pretty much abandoned it after running into a couple brick walls. So, again, I don't think you do that to Philadelphia. I don't think anybody really gets to. I mean, Pittsburgh did as good a job as you're going to find, and they held Barkley to 60-some yards. I don't think you're doing much better than that, as good as he's been against Washington over the years. But, yeah, you could say they're doing okay in that regard, right? I mean, there have been moments of sort of pass-rushing flurry from Fowler and But Armstrong actually probably had his best game in a while against New Orleans on Sunday. Not a huge stat line to show for it, but I thought he was very active. So it's an okay group. And they're middle of the pack in a lot of different categories. We look at sacks and pressures and quarterback hits and things like that to go with, I'd say, a slightly improving trend line against the run. So, yeah, but again, always good to have a good player come back, even if it's in a limited capacity.
2.4 a pop for Alvin Kamara. I will sign up for every
time, please.
Single time. And then the Tennessee game where the Titans were a pretty good running team. Now, some of this was the score and they had to throw it as the game went on, but you know, they held Pollard to 35 yards rushing, I think, on 9 attempts. I mean, they did a really good job on him and Spears combined, sub 40 yards between the two of them. So that's back-to-back games now where they've been very solid against the run. The reason I want Allen back and the reason Allen's best is still better than a lot of the guys that they've got is the pass rushing ability.
Yep.
It's why he goes in the first round. It's why he's been to Pro Bowls. It's why he's a star. We've seen him go out and get double-digit sacks, right? You've seen him, like Daron Payne, had the big year. He had the 11 sacks. I guess Allen has not gotten to that number, but the tackles for loss, some of the pass rushing metrics for him over the years have shown that he can do that. The team that they play a week from Sunday after the Eagles game is the Falcons, and we found out last night, Danny, that there will be no reunion, barring something happening to Michael Penix this weekend, for Kirk Cousins back on the field against the Commanders. Would have been, I think, his third time playing against Washington because he played them with the Vikings twice. Minnesota going 2-0 in those games, once on the road and then once here. But there will be no third chance for Washington at Cousins. He got benched by the Falcons yesterday. They're going to their rookie, Michael Penix, out of Washington, with three games to go. And Atlanta's in a golden spot. They're dropping Penix into a really nice landing spot here because they play the Giants as favorites. They should win that game. Then they come to Washington. They'll be underdogs, I'd imagine. It's going to be a close game. It'll be a tough game. But if they could somehow win that, then they'd enter Week 18 ahead of the Commanders in the wild card standings, even if they haven't caught the Bucs yet, for the NFC West.
Yeah. I mean, this is...
The South, rather.
Right. This had to happen, I think, which is strange to say, but... You know, I use this word sometimes. I was thinking about it, usually reserved for someone like a Bryce Young or Carson Wentz, when whatever ability you may have had, you can't get anymore. Like, you can't use your abilities. Broken is the word. That's what Cousins looks like right now, is whether it's physical. I mean, you could see something physically is not right. Like, he can't get to the point where he's making the handoff. I'm not talking about the straight, you know, eye formation, turnaround hand to somebody. Those famous Shanahan stretch runs, those stretch zone plays where Peyton Manning, by the end of his career, was lunging to get the ball to a running back that's got to hit a target point. He can't do it. He had to pitch them a few different times. Whether he's not stepping into throws or doesn't physically trust it, I think now it's gotten in his head and it's now this compounding effect. This is not good the way he's played. Again, one touchdown and 9 pick over his last 5 games, not really even giving them a chance. Their offense doesn't look very good. So in that sense, good luck to Michael Penix. Again, the offense doesn't look like it's humming, but maybe there's a better fit. Just physically right now, Cousins looks broken. So maybe Penix will give him kind of that shot in the arm because physically he's pretty gifted and pretty good. I mean, he's not running around like Jaden Daniels or anything, but he can move a little bit and he can sling it. So, you know, maybe the offense is different that way. It still goes through Bijan Robinson, honestly, and that's kind of what I would major in too. But, yeah, this is, you know, if it doesn't work, whatever was happening wasn't working. So this is one of those, like, high pressure because it's for playoffs, but it's also lower pressure because it's not as if he was walking into a great situation where they were buzzsawing people and now he has to play. This is like our offense barely managed a forward pass against the Raiders, who are terrible. Do slightly better than that and you'll be a hero.
Yeah, I think the key for Penix is going to be not turning the football over. Because, especially in this game against the Giants, like if you don't turn the ball over with their running game, and their defense has played better the last couple of weeks, they were terrible for most of the season, but they actually have played some of their best football the last couple of weeks, which is maybe why they're making this change where they're going, hey, we got to stop turning the ball over. I mean, Cousins has thrown seven picks in the last three games. He had the four interception game that was brutal against the Chargers. But that's kind of where it's at. Like the 16 picks speak for themselves. You can't keep turning the ball over. And week in and week out, they go into these games, and it's oftentimes a first and 10 and plus territory interception. Monday night, I guess it was, they're playing against the Raiders. The first play of the second half, they get a big kick return to like the 40-yard line. They come out. They lead the game 9-3, I think it was. They got a lot of momentum. Everyone's jumping around after special teams gets them a big return. And it's the first play of the second half. Cousins in the gun, throws a pick in the middle of the field. And now, on a short field, here come the Raiders. So, they made the change, I think, just because they can't keep doing the interception thing. And there were just too many of them, too many of those mistakes. He is in a rut from a mental and confidence standpoint that I haven't seen since 2014 when Jay benched him. And if you remember back then, Jay said, I think he told Cousins this, I'm not benching you because you can't play. I'm benching you because you got to get out of your own head. What I don't know about him right now is how much does he have left from a base and legs standpoint? How much of this is the natural recovery from the Achilles, which happened, you know, around October of last year, him not trusting it? That's what I don't know. But I think it's been a bad situation there from the beginning. You know, they told him they weren't going to draft a quarterback. They immediately draft Penix in the top 10. You got to get over that, but that's how it all starts. Then you come in there and they run nothing that he runs well. There's no under center drop back. There's no play action. Everything's at a pistol. It's been confounding to me all year long. But he's played really poorly, and he turns the ball over week in and week out, and so they made the change. I'm still a little surprised that they did, because Raheem Morris, as recently as a week ago, was talking about how they're not going to make a change. He's rolling with the veteran. Cousins deserves the time. And I guess they just decided they'd given him enough time. But it's after a win when he did have the pick. But I didn't think it was like awful this past Monday night. I thought he looked bad physically, and maybe that's what it was.
I think that's it to me.
But they ran the ball in 17 of their final 23 plays, and four of the six passes were on 3rd and 9 or longer. Like, there's no real chance to have a passing game there in the second half of that game. Now, if someone says, well, they called the game that way because they don't trust him to not throw a pick, well, then you can't play him if that's the case.
Yeah, and that's kind of my thinking.
I don't know if that's the case, but if that was the case, why did you start him against the Raiders anyway?
Right. I think physically it ain't right. I don't know if it's ever going to be right again or if it's just not right now. You know what I mean? I don't know if it's the Achilles, if there's something new.
He's 36 off of an Achilles, and they're going to end up paying him about $90 million for 14 starts, by the way. He made, you know, close to 60 this year. They owe him another close to 30 next year. But someone could bring him in via trade at about $27 million next year.
There'll be some vacancies, and guys may not be able to pick right at the top of the board.
I wonder, though, like, the question's going to be, do you think that this year was the beginning of him just not being able to move anymore? And he's just now, because of this Achilles, he's immobile, you know where he's at, he can't anchor off that back foot and drive it? Or do you feel like this is a bad rut he got into, in a situation that's not ideal schematically, maybe, or whatever, and you think you could bring him in and he could run your thing, and there's a suitor at $27 million. I mean, he had a 500-yard, 4-touchdown game this year. Like, it's not like it was all terrible, right? So I'll be really fascinated to see if there's a market or what that looks like, or if he wants to keep playing.
Yeah.
I mean, if he really is as bothered as it looks like he is, as you said, when he's moving around trying to hand the ball off and stuff, he's made all the money. He's got a couple of kids and a wife. He could just say, you know what? I had a 14-year career as a fourth-round pick. I'll go do TV or whatever it is.
A lot of zeros and commas in my paychecks over the years. So my feeling is that this is there's an additional injury situation now, in addition, as he's also recovering from the Achilles. So he was never going to be like the high jump champion or the sprint champion. He's not going to win the 4-cone drill. That's never who he was. But you could see it at times early in the season where he couldn't get plant on that back foot and then push off and drive the ball. Looks like he's throwing a Todd Collins changeup in some of the balls that you're used to him driving in there. He's never had the Brett Favre howitzer, but not that many guys have. It wasn't what his game was. But even now, losing miles per hour off his fastball looks like it's gotten more exasperated. Now, at this point in the season, you mentioned there were some good moments where he looked like he had his legs under him. Now looks something different again. And I don't know if it's an ankle. I don't know exactly what's going on. I haven't followed it tremendously closely. But physically, he just doesn't look right to me. I think that's where the discussion is. And because you're compensating, you don't trust anything. You don't trust your body. You don't trust your eyes. You don't trust any part of you. And so now you look broken. I think that all you need is time, healing, new situation. And I think he could still play. But who knows if that's going to plan out that way.
I think Penix is actually going to be a really good fit for what they do right now. I think they kind of built a offense that really works for Penix more than even Cousins. In that, again, there's zero bootlegs. There's zero play action. There's nothing under center. It's a college, like what he did at Washington, kind of. Everything's in the pistol.
I've always liked him, by the way. I didn't understand why he didn't get
super
more fanfare.
Accurate. Yeah. I agree with you. I think he can throw the football. But my guess is that the offense they built is like, it's Penix, right? Mm-hmm. So they drop him in, and my guess is that he'll be able to throw the football around a little bit, and they'll have success. Bijan Robinson's got the running game going. So they're going to be a tough out next week for Washington.
Agreed.
I think they would have been anyway, and they're now with a more athletic possible quarterback who's feeling better under center, or in their case, in the pistol. It's going to be a tough team to beat. But speaking of injuries, we talked about the return of John Allen. Marshawn Lattimore is back for Washington as well. How does this change the defensive outlook for the remainder of the season for their final three matchups? And what do we expect from this defense down the stretch? We'll get to that next. Grant and Danny with you on The Fan. Minutes from now at 4 o'clock, we're giving away Wizards tickets, and at 5 o'clock, in about an hour, 2.5 hours, we will give away Caps tickets. So if you want tickets to go see either of the teams that call Capital One Arena home, you better be listening to G&D. Danny Cannell is going to be on the show tomorrow, by the way, at 5 East, one of our favorite college football guests, ahead of the college football playoffs, which are getting going. Should be a lot of fun into the weekend. I'm excited for them, Danny. I think this is a long time coming. I know it's not a perfect situation.
Nothing is.
But I do think this will be the most locked in on college football I've probably been, maybe ever, but certainly in a long, long time.
So they've got a lot to do. Not that they care about me at all, but college football's got a lot to do to win me back. I'm hoping maybe this playoff does it. Like, I start to see some of the intrigue and it makes more sense. Like I always said back in the day, I'd rather have the argument be over who's 3-4 than 1-2. Now the argument over who's 5-6 versus who's 3-4. Now you push that back. Like, Miami should have gotten in if you're one of those people. That's the 13th best team in the country. I'm fine. Like, you know what I mean? We'll be okay. So maybe it draws me in the way, or some ghost of the NCAA tournament, which is my favorite sporting event that we've got lasting a couple of weeks the way that it does. But maybe this is what grabs me again.
You said college football trying to win you back.
Yeah.
Are you out on college basketball as well? Is it NCAA sports?
No, college basketball still has the tournament, which is perfect. So I don't follow the way that I did. Like, I used to be.
So what do you hate about college football?
A lot. The realignment to me is way worse.
They did that for basketball too.
Right, but it's way worse. I can't tell you why, but it just bothers me more. That SMU is playing Clemson for the whatever championship. It just irritates me more. Let me see. What else? The fact that we don't care about resumes. We just go, well, give me the best matchup. Like, it's boxing. We did that last year. Like, the fact that Florida State didn't make it disgusted me. And just sort of not having a team ever in it. Like, it's just, I've never been less interested in college football.
Okay. So your issues then are somewhat that you're not as into it as you are college basketball. I thought you were doing the transfer portal, you hate that, and players moving all over the place.
Oh, I don't like any of it. Okay. Like, so college sports in general, you're right. I don't follow it the same way, but football was way more off-putting to me in terms of the game.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
I enjoy college football. The only thing for me is, and I'm sure you can relate to this, and many of our listeners can, because of how into the NFL we are on Sundays, I can't then ask for all day Saturday as well. Like, at some point, you kind of got to put some deposits in the bank as a dad.
That's right.
And as a husband. Mm-hmm. So from Sunday when we get home from church, or if I'm at the game, like when I leave after my baseball show that I do nationally on MLB Network Radio, I'm gone. And until, you know, the end of Sunday Night Football, pretty much locked in on the NFL. I can't then be college football guy on Saturday. So normally that's when we're doing stuff. Yep. I very casually watch. I'll watch the night games. That's the only thing standing between me and being a guy who, like, paints his face at a stadium on a Saturday, I think. Like, I would love it. It just, I've never had the ability to, because you got to get something done sometime. Saturday
at a certain point, you got to be around.
But I'd like nothing more than to just be a football all weekend guy. And then I'm a dad during the week, except on Monday nights and Thursday nights.
But other than that.
Right.
Or when the Caps are playing or the Nationals.
It's like when when I thought about it, I was like, you know, I should not bet as much on sports. All right, I'll lower the unit I'm putting on games for March Madness and for the next 3 months, except for the NFL playoffs.
Except for the NFL playoffs.
And except for NCAA tournament. And it's like, there's a lot of exceptions here, mm-hmm. You know?
It's not even a rule anymore.
John Allen's coming back. He may well play the final two games of the season. So what kind of impact do you think he would have, and how badly do they need him? Daron Payne has had a quiet year. Maybe the biggest contribution he can make is taking a little pressure off Payne and maybe helping him make more plays. Johnny Newton's been solid, but when you have a guy with a Pro Bowl resume coming back in, even if the profile and the attention being paid to John Allen is more than kind of even what he can do as a performer at this point, that might still help you a lot to free up Daron Payne some next to him.
The hope is, you know, it's less to me about, like, do you have a solid space heater? Because I can do that. I'll get Sheldon Day to do it, or I'll let Big Phil get activated again and just to you know, hold the point of attack so that a linebacker can go and make a tackle.
Sheldon Day, just as an aside, is a little tank, by the way. Mm-hmm. He's listed 6'1". He's not that. I mean, if he's 6 foot, I'll eat your phone. But he's probably like 5'11", mm-hmm. 290. I think he gets low and he's hard to move.
That's what he's there for.
He's like a little bowling ball. Yeah. He's done a really good job for them, actually.
Like, that's fine. To me, the reason you pay somebody $20+ million is to wreak havoc. So maybe there's times where you overcommit. Maybe you get upfield too far and somebody runs a trap play behind you, or, you know, you get caught. And that's fine. I can live with that. I want the negatives. The thing that stops drives, holding penalties, sacks, tackles for a loss, plays that are blown up, etc. And that's why Allen has made Pro Bowls, or been Pro Bowl caliber in the past, right? Around 8 sacks, the TFL numbers, he's approached 19, 20 in certain years. Payne, the year that he broke out and got paid, similar thing. I need somebody to do that on the interior. Now, some of that may be limited by scheme, some of it may be limited by opportunity. Maybe that's not what they're being asked to do down in, down out. I understand that, right? But all I know is that it happens sometimes. I want it to happen more often. Right? I mean, that's how you get off the field. That's how you get those third and longs. That's how you get the turnovers. You put offenses in negative spots. Too often this year, they have not done that. They've just, you know, they've been fine. They've had to play shell and kind of been passive and, you know, let things happen in front of them, whether you're able to stop somebody or they stop themselves, whatever. I don't care. To beat good teams, I need you to be able to beat that guard. I need you to knife through that center guard blocking combo, or when somebody's pulling, you get upfield so quick that the play gets disrupted, the timing of it. That's what he's there for to me. And I'm hoping that happens. I'm not optimistic, to be honest with you, that a guy with that layoff and that wasn't really doing that before he was hurt is able to just come in and start doing it. But that's the hope. That's the idea.
Yeah, I think that Johnny Newton's been very solid, but I'd like to get back to a situation where the rotation is deeper with guys that you trust to rush the quarterback, that everyone can be a little sharper in their reps. And that's where I want to be with Johnny Newton, where instead of playing, you know, 35 snaps, maybe it's 16 snaps. But those 16, you've got more energy and you're more capable. And so I'm getting the best version of you. Same with John Allen. I don't need him to do what he was doing at his apex in his career, where he's playing 70% of snaps or something crazy on the defensive line. Like, we can fire sale change this thing and wholesale sub this thing. I got no problem with that. And that's essentially where I want this D-line to be down the stretch, is that Allen comes back, everyone's a little fresher. You just get a little better version of each rusher. Because I don't have any delusions of grandeur that Allen's going to be playing at the level he was a few years ago. I've kind of given up that hope on Payne as well for whatever reason. It just doesn't quite look the same in terms of impact and pass rush and pushing the pocket. But a little better version of everyone, I think, is capable when you bring Allen back, because whatever he gives you coming back from injury is going to be a lot better than what you'd be getting out of either Fidarian Mathis if he was active, or, you know, someone else that you're signing. The other thing is, though, we have not seen this defense with Allen, with Lattimore, kind of the reinforcements that they're adding. I mean, now they're going to have a couple of potentially favorable matchups. The Falcons are a pretty unimaginative offense. They run it on first down as much as anybody in the league. It's a ton of first and second down runs into a third down pass, which is kind of what I like to play against if I'm a defensive coordinator, honestly. They are a go-on-drives offense, yep, so to speak. There's nothing really easy over the top for them. It's Mooney and Ray-Ray McCloud and Drake London all kind of operating in that line of scrimmage, the 15-yard area. The week after that, you're going to have the Cowboys with CeeDee Lamb and not a whole lot else in terms of weaponry. So just thinking about the last two games, and obviously they could still play and beat the Eagles, but skipping ahead to the final two where you might need to win two games, I think this sets up for the defense to actually play really well a couple times. And if they could stop the run better against Saquon Barkley than they did in the second half against Philly, maybe even mess around, turn Jalen Hurts over, and try to steal one against the Eagles. I just like where their defense is for this stretch run.
Yeah, that's the path, right? It's as healthy as you could possibly be at this stage, right? Every look at Detroit, for goodness sakes. Like, what is it, 50, 60% of their starting defensive personnel is already on injured reserve, and that number kind of continues to climb? So getting Allen back would certainly be a boon. I know he's probably not available this week, and you're sort of targeting Atlanta, but your point, I think, is right on. Adding Lattimore to the mix can only help, right? You're better with more good football players. Duh. More analysis like this to come. But, yeah, I mean, Philadelphia, I don't know. I think that's a poor matchup for almost anybody in the NFL, let alone this Washington defense. It's probably not quite good enough to stop them or, you know, a lot of more proficient offenses. But I'm with you on Dallas and Atlanta, right, where the predictability of it, like, you might get, you know, Kayvon Turpin might do something, you know, on an end around that surprises you, or you get a double throwback pass to Kamara the way the Saints did. But down in, down out, I'll take my chances against some of these lesser, more predictable offenses.
He's Danny. I'm Grant. You're listening to The Fan at the top of the hour, right at 3 o'clock. It's going to take two wins in the final three, probably, for Washington to make the playoffs. However they get them doesn't really matter. They're probably going to have to win two out of the three, and the Atlanta game might be the most significant of the three in terms of overall import. What is your biggest concern about this team getting those two wins based on personnel and how they're playing right now? We'll get into that in 20 minutes. Next, though, are the Washington Nationals ever going to sign anybody? Are they going to do anything? Do we need to let them know that the offseason began? Check, check.
Hey, bud.
Hey, Nats. You know you're allowed to get better right now, right? You know you got a lot of money coming off those books. This is The Fan. Welcome back, Grant and Danny on The Fan. It is Jaden Daniels' 24th birthday today. So happy birthday to the young quarterback who's on his way to the Rookie of the Year Award in the National Football League. Daniels was at the podium doing a press conference with the media today, and Mikey Sanristil, the fellow rookie, University of Michigan star who has turned himself into a really good corner already in his first year with Washington, walked out a little piece of cake with a candle in it and saying happy birthday to him. I don't know if that was from the whole team or just from Mikey Sanristil.
I don't know.
I thought that was a nice gesture. Daniels completing 70% of his passes, 17 touchdowns, 6 interceptions on the season, has added, obviously, one big play after another as a rusher who's on his way to over 700, maybe 800 rushing yards this season to go along with his passing exploits. But I teased this, wanted to get into this really quickly before the end of the hour. Coming up at 3 o'clock on G&D, we'll get into our concerns about the Commanders as they need to win two out of their final three to make sure that they make the playoffs. Are there areas that you are nervous about and worried about right now when you watch this team? But Danny, the Nats still haven't done anything. It is December 18th, so it's not opening day.
Nope.
And it's not close to opening day. Pitchers and catchers don't report for another 2 months. Spring training is 2.5 months away. You know, the first game of the season's not till the end of March, start of April. You got the whole offseason. And if you actually look at the calendar for when they've made some of their big splash acquisitions over the years, many times it was after right now. But what has not changed, and what still should be annoying and bothering to fans out there, what's bothersome is they're not being linked to players very
often. This is the distinction I want to draw.
It's the inactivity. Yes, that is number one, when every other team seemingly is either linked to players or making moves or doing something. But not everybody's signed anybody yet. That's fine. So while the Cubs are going and getting Kyle Tucker and the Yankees are making a bunch of moves, and the real adults and grown-ups with money that spend money and are trying to win championships are doing a crazy thing right now where they go get high-impact players and acquire them that talent and bring it into their organization, the Nats are just kind of sitting on their hands. But it's the not hearing them linked to anybody that makes you wonder, like, what is going on over there right now?
And that's the key to me. I don't want them to go win a bidding war for Willy Adames. San Francisco signed him for 7 years, $90 million or something like that, whatever it was. That didn't make any sense for you. That's totally fine. But it's the, are you flirting with J.D. Davis in that tier to maybe play third base for you until Brady House is ready to come up to the show? Things like that. They're in the market for starting pitching, you would think. So where's the flirtation? Are you finishing second when somebody overpays for, again, you know, I don't know, name your starter that signed somewhere. I don't need you to go win a $44 million a year bidding war for Max Scherzer on a one-year deal as a hired gun to try to win your World Series. That's not where you are. But you're also nowhere. And so for everybody that has been yelling at us about saying, hey, is anyone noticing? This is almost like pre-criticism. Because when we get to spring training, then it's perfectly time and you're able to do that. All I'm saying is I've read this book before. I've seen the signs. I know what this offseason looks like because we just did this for each of the past several years, where it is that, you know, in a beach town, that Walgreens that has a DVD bin full of stuff that came out in like the 90s and like two of them were Blu-rays, one of them scratched. That's where they're shopping again. This is all the leftovers of the leftovers of the leftovers of stuff that's been picked over, and that's not how you build a team that's on the rise and contending. So if I'm wrong and they go on a spending spree over the next couple of weeks or months or whatever, yell at me all you want to. That's fine. All I'm saying is right now, this moment, I've seen these signs before, and I know where this road leads.
Yeah, where you and I have disagreed is I think I'm expecting a little bit more spending than you are. Like, you think they're going to basically spend money like they did the last couple of off seasons, where their big addition is a few million dollars for Nick Senzel or a 3-year deferred 1-year $5 million contract for Joey Gallo.
Yes.
I think they're going to do a lot more than that. But I am starting to no longer put a lot in bold. Like, my end of the offseason hope was that they land Christian Walker. I'm no longer convinced they're going to do that. I think it would be a great idea to go get Pete Alonso. I don't think they're going to do that. I'd prefer Walker to Alonso, by the way, for those that are curious. I have been hopeful that they would make a trade for a controllable pitcher who they would bring in. Not a free agency ad, but you're taking on money. So someone that's already got a contract, who's a mid-rotation, legitimate-type starter, like a better version of the role that Corbin executed last year, where you have someone who helps you every 5 days, compete to win as a veteran, who kind of runs the rotation from a leadership standpoint. I was hoping they would do that. I'm a little skeptical that that happens, although I still think that's possible, because I don't think you need as much sign-off from ownership on taking on a contract by giving up a couple of prospects as you would actually like spending real money in free agency and not having to defer the cost by giving up some minor league talent that they've assembled as well. But right now, this moment, 5 days ago, they signed Connor Pilkington to a minor league deal. Like, that's the move recently. They have been occasionally linked when you hear a bunch of teams come out. Like, I saw a Joel Sherman thing in the New York Post last week at some point where he was naming a crew of clubs that have reached out and engaged interest on Gleyber Torres. Gauging interest doesn't really mean a whole lot. That means they called and said, hey, what's Gleyber Torres looking for? All right, we'll call you back. Like, that's all that necessarily has to mean. But they were, if you want to say linked to him, that's a name that has come up. But this is just another flag I'm putting back in the ground at another mile marker. A couple of weeks since we last talked about this, with nothing going on, to say that it will be inexcusable if they don't make some real additions to this roster. They don't pay anybody currently on the team any meaningful money. The highest paid player on the team is Luis Garcia, who a year ago at spring training, you could have told me was not going to make the team, and or they were done with him and they were going to trade him for a bag of balls, and I would have said fine. He ended up having a really good year.
A nice year.
Organizational player of the year this past season. Congrats to him. That's great. He's now at a couple million bucks, their highest paid player, just because he's been around long enough to have an arbitration season. So it's him and Keibert Ruiz on a payroll that makes the Marlins and the A's, you know, comfortable, right around $30 million on actual players. They got to spend some money. They haven't yet. The offseason's not over yet, but we're still waiting. And we haven't forgotten. It needs to happen. This is the offseason where you start giving fans a reason with some money to get to the ballpark and showing that you still care a little bit about this thing.
So what was your confidence level that they were going to do the, I'm going to call it the Paulson plan, which is spend on a couple players.
Yeah, the Paulson plan is like a veteran starting pitcher, mid-rotation type.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's a 1 or 2 year deal, you know, 2 years, 36, 1 year, 15, something like that for a starting pitcher. We'll say Christian Walker, and we'll say another bat at, you know, double-digit $1 million a year.
Mm-hmm.
My confidence in the Paulson plan in April was like 80%. At the end of the year was like 60%. Right now, it's like 10%. Yeah. Now, I'm still very confident they'll sign a real baseball player, which I know you're not.
Right.
So that's our one disagreement.
Yeah,
now.
I am not.
I'm coming closer and closer to your camp, but I still have 1 foot out the tent where I'm going. Like, if I found out they signed Christian Walker, that would not surprise me. They need to. It shouldn't be maybe they'll do it. Like, that's the kind of move they need to make. But I think they'll make one real move where they pay someone more than, say, $15 million a year. Like an actual legitimate stud. I do think they'll bring in one key, put him on the poster player.
I certainly hope that's the case. I don't know. It's a tougher sell right now.
It's not going to be Max Fried. He's got a home.
Well, yeah.
It's not going to be Corbin Burns. It's not going to. I would have wanted them to sign one of those guys. It's not going to be Pete Alonso. Like, it's not at that level. So get out of that pool.
Mm-hmm.
Go to the next, you know, not the baby pool.
Go to the little pond.
The middle pool. Go to the small pond. I think they'll get a good player in that pool.
At this point, I'd be doing spin kicks if they do. Like, it's not where we should be, but it's better than zero. It's better than this. It's better than this feeling. So, again, I'm not even making a prediction. I'm simply saying, I'm just letting everyone know I see the road signs. As we're driving along the highway, I see the signs. I've driven down this highway before. And I'm hoping that we don't end up in the same destination. I hope they exit off and do, whether it's the Paulson plan or some variation of it.
Wizards tickets at 4, Caps tickets at 5. Next, our concerns, if we have any, about the Commanders down the stretch as they try to punch a playoff ticket. You're listening to The Fan.